Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, March the 14th, 2014. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Jackie McIntosh.
Hello.
And Jenny Rempel.
Hello.
Alyssa, Cynthia, and Tim are away today. Welcome, everyone. Happy Pi Day and happy Meet Out Day for next week. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that keep you up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. In addition to our live broadcasts here on 100.5 FM and at Co-op Radio, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. For our first interview today, we have Patricia Tellman on the show. Patricia is a local activist who heads up the grassroots organization called Canadians Against Live Export. Last September, 500 Canadian lambs were exported overseas to Singapore for the purposes of religious sacrifice. And Patricia is campaigning to end the live export of animals from Canada for these killings. She'll be speaking with us about the issue and about the campaign. And the annual Meet Out Day is coming up next week on March 20th. This is an annual event that encourages you to take the pledge to go veg for a day or more. The trend of veganism is on the rise, and we welcome back Paul Shapiro today to give us his thoughts on this lifestyle trend for 2014. Paul is the Vice President of Farm Animal Protection for the Humane Society of the United States, which means he's a really knowledgeable guy when it comes to reporting on all things to do with animal agriculture. In addition to speaking about the issues of eating less meat, he'll also talk to us about the Ag Gag Bill passed in Idaho last week and the recent announcement of moving towards banning gestation crates for pigs in Canada. This interview is coming out up in about 33 minutes, so please do stay tuned. So Jenny and Jackie, last weekend you both partook in social and educational events that involved indulging in the consumption of pizza, perfect to speak about on Pi Day today. So please do tell us about this.
I actually hosted one of these events. I started a club at my school, Simon Fraser University, called the Love Club, which stands for Living Opposed to Violence and Exploitation. So we decided to host an event, and our event was called Why Don't Vegans Eat Cheese? And it was meant to be a thought-provoking event to encourage people to think about why vegans don't eat cheese. So we had a number of food samples there. We had three different types of vegan pizza, which was provided by Vegan Pizza House in White Rock, which was really great. And then I also got pretty busy. This was my first chance to make vegan cheese, so I'd never actually experimented in making my own vegan cheese before. But I made three different types of vegan cheese, I guess four. So there was two kind of block, like platter cheeses. There was an American oat cheese that I made from the Vegan Artisan Cheese book. And then there was a really great caraway and dill cheese that I made, which
was... That sounds really good.
Yeah, it was really easy too. It was just from an online recipe. So that was one of my favorites, and it was a crowd favorite too. So we had those with some different crackers and stuff, and there was a block of the Daya cheese for people to try as well, so lots of different options. And then I made a fettuccine sauce for some pasta and had some nut parmesan with that, so lots of different varieties of cheese. And we also had some earth melons there, a vegan butter substitute for people to sample, and we had almond milk and coconut milk for people to try. So lots of dairy-free delights were abundant at this event, and I think people really enjoyed getting to try the alternative. There was a lot of omnivores there and people that were new to veganism and just interested in learning more. So it was a great chance to expose people to some new experiences and samples at the event.
And what did your presentation entail as to discussing and presenting about why vegans don't eat dairy?
Yeah, so in addition to all the food and stuff, we actually had an informative presentation given by yours truly at the beginning of the event. So I was just kind of telling my own personal vegan story and how I got involved in the animal rights movement and why this issue was important to me. And then I was talking about some of the main reasons why vegans don't eat cheese or dairy. So specifically with the dairy industries, there's a lot of problems in terms of how the cows are treated. So one of the big things is just inherent to the dairy industry. To make milk, cows need to be pregnant. And how do cows get pregnant? Well, it's not very pretty. Usually they use an insemination rod or even what's called a rape rack. And I told everyone you can Google both of those things and look at pictures for yourself. We didn't go into any imagery or videos or anything at this event because that wasn't really the purpose. That wasn't to try to gross anyone out or anything, but more to provide information so people can look into those things on their own. But yeah, I talked about the rape connection with the dairy industry, and then also how the baby cows are taken away after they're born, because in order for people to drink the milk, the baby cows don't get to drink the milk. So if you go on any dairy industry website, you can see they have like a veal barn or a place where the baby cows are taken away from their mothers and kept before they're sold to be meat or turned into dairy cows themselves. So.
And what did you find like some of the reactions were from people that attended the event?
Well, I think most people were knowledgeable already or not surprised that there was something negative associated with the industry, given the nature of the event. Yeah. So most of the people who attended were very interested in transitioning to a vegan lifestyle, and they had a lot of practical questions about it. Okay. So there wasn't anyone who was really questioning the information I was giving. And I think a lot of that too is because I was referencing really credible sources, like for example, the dairy industry website. I mean, this information, it's not like I'm making it up or these are lies or stories. It's pretty easy to find out for yourself that this is the reality of what happens.
So were the cheeses a hit, in particular the ones you made, and also the pizza and the daya?
Yeah, I think people seemed to like it. There was a lot of different options there. So, I mean, if someone didn't like one, I wanted to make sure that people had a lot of different other things they could try, because I know not everyone's a fan of different types of cheeses. So particularly that caraway dill one was really good. Maybe I'll post the recipe on our Facebook
page. Yes, I'd like the recipe for that.
It's really good.
So Jackie, you went to a pizza making party last week. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so it was actually kind of similar to Jenny's event. It was also hosted by university, the University of British Columbia. Activists for Animals group. So yeah, it was a party where there was an ex-chef that made the dough, and then everyone kind of brought just different ingredients to put on their pizzas, different vegetables or meat alternatives or just weird things. Like there was a sushi pizza actually that someone made.
What was on that? Seaweed?
It was was straight up sushi that was cut up and put on the pizza. Apparently it was good. I didn't actually try that one, but yeah, there were some interesting pizzas, and the host of the event, Caroline, actually made some cheeses as well. They were more soy based, and they did contain carrageenan, which I know a lot of people are concerned about, but it was actually really good and nice.
What's
to have
carrageenan?
That.
Why are people
concerned? It's a type of seaweed, but apparently there's some rumor that it's not good for your health or something.
In my cheese making, I discovered even a lot of recipes from cheese books contain it. So it's not just like something they put into processed food. It's something that's used in a lot
it
of different recipes.
It stabilizes the cheeses. So.
In the quantity it's in foods, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think there's a lot of worse things we could do for our health. And it was this event was interesting as well, because they also ended the pizza party by sharing the story of Activists for Animals, how it started, and what kind of campaigns they're working on. And then also everybody had the opportunity to share their childhood animal-related stories, which was really nice to hear. Just the diversity, how some people even, you know, grew up maybe not being so nice to animals, and then they met an animal that they were attached to, and that changed their life and changed their perspective on animals. And so it was just really interesting to hear the diversity.
Well, thank you for sharing your stories for Pi Day.
Soundscape. My name is Gabe. Welcome to, and you are listening to radio station CFRO 100, and on the internet, Marks, and you are listening to Vancouver's corporate soundscape, and you are listening to Vancouver's the internet at corpradio.org, 100.5 FFRO at corp.org, and you are listening to this corp at your station FFRO.org, internet of radio, and my radio, and sound corp, ask it, see to break the mask, one of our, the mountain, and ask it, the mountain, and the mountain, and the mountain,
Soundscape. Hosted by the Cut and Run Collective, Soundscape airs every Wednesday at 9 p.m. on CFRO 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver. Find our podcast, events listings, and reviews online at furiousgreencloud.com/cutandrun. Soundscape. We collect omnivorous oral media here.
You're listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio on the downtown east side in British Columbia, Canada. So I have some news stories for you today. In the news today, Sea Shepherd thwarts Japanese hunt. BC keeps wolf calling plans secret. Presentation at UBC was disrupted by activists. California bill would ban orca shows at SeaWorld, and elephant saves baby from house debris. To start off, sea shepherd conservationists say they have stopped Japanese whalers from killing any humpback whales in their 10th campaign against the slaughter of the animals. Japanese whalers killed between 100 and 200 whales out of a goal of closer to 900, making this one of their most successful campaigns yet. And in other news, the British Columbia government is publicly claiming to be totally transparent on how it manages wolves, but at the same time is refusing to release its most recent version of the wolf management plan. Since the 2012 consultation, there have been some 1,000 pages of updated drafts produced. However, none have been released yet. There has been rumor that the government is considering a poisoning program. Poisoning wolves would be a return to a practice begun in the 1950s and ended in 1961 that's been blamed for the local extinction of wolves and other non-target animals in some parts of the province. And at UBC, Arvind Gupta was announced UBC's new president in a presentation this Wednesday. The presentation was interrupted at two points by animal activists who were protesting the university's use of over 200,000 animals annually in animal research. The protesters held signs and chanted for a few moments and then left peacefully, returning a short while later with further chanting, and were eventually escorted out by security.
So I heard that, interestingly, the media cameras for TV stations were turned off, or they were told, turn off the cameras. Is that right? Did you hear that,
Jackie? Yeah, I find that interesting because you'd think that media would jump all over this as it's, you know.
Except they were instructed to by UBC, right? Turn off the cameras?
Yeah, that's my understanding. So, yeah, it's kind of an interesting.
Censorship.
It's very.
But you heard it here.
It's quite interesting censorship. There is a video still in circulation by the UBC local newspaper called the UBC. So if you want to look up that video.
I love the name of that paper.
Yeah. UBC.ca.
Yeah, if you want to look up that video, you can still find it.
UBC.ca.
Absolutely. And a California state legislator is proposing the ban of captivity of killer whales for entertainment at SeaWorld in the wake of CNN's controversial documentary Blackfish. Bloom was joined by Blackfish director Gabriella Caperthwaite, two former SeaWorld orca trainers, and an animal welfare activist. The proposed law would end performance-based entertainment for all killer whales in California, captive breeding programs, and the export and import of genetic material, and the import and export of orcas within the state. Also, the proposal would retire all captive killer whales to sea pens if available, and would allow retired orcas to be on display but not perform. And in India, a rampaging elephant bursts into a house on Monday, smashing the walls and terrifying the family inside, who were just sitting down to dinner. But when the elephant heard a 10-month-old human baby crying under the debris, he began to carefully pick up bits of stone and mortar with his trunk, gently uncovering the infant while her parents watched. The human-elephant conflict in these parts has risen over the past few years because of change in land use pattern that has blocked the elephant's traditional migration routes. Herds routinely raid farms and villages and smash houses, and another herd of 18 elephants is roaming in nearby Hensa Forest. But I found this story particularly interesting because of the fact that the elephant did recognize that there was an infant inside and went ahead and rescued the infant.
Yeah, it's interesting when we hear about how animals react to babies, but I've seen it lots of times before with companion animal dogs that I've had, and even our pet chicken that I've talked about on the show before. She used to be really gentle with babies touching her. And why not for elephants? They're known to be these majestic, really intelligent creatures and very, very matriarchal. Like they know family. They're all about family. And so they would recognize that these are infants and oops, maybe I shouldn't rampage and I should here just wipe away this debris that I made. But also really interesting about that story is that I didn't know that I just heard from you is that you said that they're frequently rampaging into people's homes. Wow. What does that mean?
Well, it's like I was saying, it was just because, humans are, you know, taking over this area, and so the elephant's migration patterns are disrupted. So that actually is a part of the story that I find really interesting as well, is just the fact that we like to take over places without thinking about who's already living there.
It's like a super elephant.
Yeah.
The baby.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Well, thank you for the news for this week, Jackie. So our first interview is with Patricia Tellman. She is a local activist and currently heads up the organization called Canadians Against Live Export, which is a grassroots group campaigning to end the live export of animals from Canada overseas for the purposes of religious sacrifice. She is here today to speak with us about this issue and about this campaign. Hello, Patricia, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yes, so please tell us about the background about this issue. From what I understand, last year, 500 Canadian lambs were sent to Singapore as a source for ritual killing. To start, can you talk to us about what this religious sacrifice is all about?
Yes. In October last year, Canada did send 500 lambs to Singapore, and they were sent as a trial run by the Singapore Mosque Korban Committee to test our supply chain ahead of their Hari Raya Haji festival, because the usual supply chain, that being Australia, had decreased their shipment numbers. So this is a historic first for Canada to be exporting live animals for the purpose of religious sacrifice. The Canadian lambs cost $757 per lamb, while the Australian ones cost $455, so roughly about $300 more per lamb. This festival is celebrated by Muslims worldwide to commemorate the story of Abraham's willingness to sacrifice his firstborn son to God. And at the time of the shipment last October, Canada was the only country approved by the Singapore Agri-Food and Veterinary Authority, the AVA. So that's why they had asked Canada. But since then, that AVA authority has approved the States, France, and also Ireland. And this festival this year, it fluctuates from year to year. It's not a fixed date. But this year, it will occur around October 4th. So the next potential shipment would be around late September, if that goes ahead.
So can you please describe to us the welfare concerns for these animals and shipping them so far away overseas? And the research I've done and from what I've read, where this is commonly happening in Australia, yes. I've read that a lot of these animals die on the ships over. Yes. Is that the case?
Yes. Well, as you mentioned, Australia has been the main supply source of live animals. But in 2011, 2 years ago, an expose of the cruelty of live export garnered international outrage, and the Australian government subsequently implemented a regulatory framework to deal with some of these issues for those foreign livestock exporters. And that framework's acronym is ESCAS, or ASCAS for short, and it stands for Exporter Supply Chain Assurance System. It's a long name. It became effective in December 2012. The concern was over the inhumane transport, because they travel for a long time, over long distances, the handling of the livestock, and the slaughter practices for their animals. So as a result of these new export regulations, 16 mosques were audited by the Australian government for last year's Korban ritual, and they approved 2,000 sheep just at the very last minute. Hence, the Korban Committee decided they needed to test another supply chain, and that's why they approached Canada for those 500 lambs.
So can you describe us the process that takes place and how these animals are being slaughtered, our Canadian lambs and sheep?
Yes. Well, it's a it's not a pretty sight. Basically, the religious sacrifice requires that the animal be killed while fully conscious by having their throat slit and letting the animal bleed to death. So that's the religious sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Now, as you can imagine, animal rights group in Australia have done investigations, and they have found many failures, such as insufficient audit of the slaughter facilities, approval of restraint devices that turn the animal upside down before slitting their throats. There's poorly trained slaughtermen, resulting in prolonged death for the animals. In other words, they slit their throats, it wasn't done properly, and they have to do it again. The blade might not be sharp enough. And there's also situations where weak animals, instead of using emergency killing, These animals were instead dragged, roped, or have their tendons slashed to bring them down before slitting their throats. And these were all documented in undercover investigations. But, you know, even with the Australian implementation of the F-gas regulation that I mentioned, they actually have no legal standing in foreign countries. And certainly the Canadian animals are not subjected to the F-gas regulation, and they are given no measure of protection.
So I know that New Zealand used to export animals as well for this purpose, and that was banned in 2003. Mm-hmm. And from what I've read is that this ban is in the future for Australia as well. As far as you know, what has been instigating, what has instigated the ban for New Zealand and maybe talks about it for Australia? Is it these welfare concerns for animals?
Yes, well, the campaign has been long fought, and it's been, you know, as you say, 2003 for New Zealand, and even ever since then, Australia has been raising awareness against this live export industry. So it's been fought with public awareness and investigations. Now, take the recent case in January, just a couple of months ago, where over 4,000 sheep died en route from Australia to the Middle East. Basically, they were cooked alive in the searing temperatures of the Middle East. That's 4,000 sheep cooked alive on a vessel. And in that particular case, that exporter already had five other breaches of live export regulations. And the public outrage was so strong that it has prompted several politicians to ask for the suspension of that exporter's license, and one senator calling for an end to live exports. And that's what we want Canadians to know about, the inhumane and unregulated killings of our animals in foreign countries.
So it's a touchy subject when it comes to religious practices. You know, who are we to say you can't practice your religion, right? But you say that no religion should ever justify cruelty to another living being. Can you talk about this? And is this also one of the underlying arguments of your campaign to stop this export from taking place?
That's right. Tradition, culture, religion, or any reason for that matter, never justifies cruelty to another being. And some Muslims themselves are now questioning the necessity of this ritual sacrifice, and those who don't agree with it don't participate. And others are speaking out against this tradition, indicating that it is in fact opposite to their message of mercy and compassion espoused by the Quran and the Prophet Muhammad. In fact, this religious sacrifice is not even mandatory. In fact, last month in Denmark, the Danish government banned halal slaughter, saying that animal rights come before religion. Right. And that's a huge first step in the right direction.
So you have sent a press release to the major media outlets about this campaign, and I know you told me earlier that not one of them have responded to it to get this issue broadcasted to the public. I find this really perplexing, and I wonder what your thoughts are on this. Why do you think the mainstream media isn't giving this issue and the campaign the attention it deserves?
That's a really good question, and if I had the answer, then we wouldn't be having this result. I really don't know why. We've sent our press release to the leader of the opposition, Tom Mulcair of the NDP, three times without even a reply. And we sent the press release to Elizabeth May of the Green Party twice, and that garnered no response. And as you mentioned, no media outlet has responded to do a story on this to inform Canadians. And I'm thinking, is it because 500 lambs is not a big enough number for the media to carry the story? You know, until we get the public to put pressure on our politicians in office and write letters to editors of our newspapers, this campaign for the lambs bound for this religious sacrifice will not gain much momentum.
Well, yes, my question is how will the public get to know about it if no one's putting it out there? By the way, we at Co-op Radio are putting it out there, and that's why I wanted to have you on the show. But
yes.
How are all Canadians going to find out about this so that they have the chance to express how they're feeling about something that really affects us as Canadian citizens?
Well, we do have a Facebook group. So the listeners can inform their friends, families, and even people, they don't even have to be vegans or animal rights activists. I think any normal Canadian or average Canadian would not want our animals to be offered up for religious sacrifice overseas. I can't think of a decent person who would, knowingly just allow that to happen. And so ask them to join the Facebook group, and on our Facebook group, there's a petition right at the top that they can, you know, just click the link and hit sign. And there's also a sample letter that you can just simply copy and then paste it into a letter to your MP. And we also have a link to on the Facebook group to find your MP. And you can also use that same letter, copy and paste it, and send it to a letter to your local newspaper or the newspaper of in the city where you reside. I have tried to ask reporters and local personalities to report and talk on this issue, but again, there's no reply. But just to illustrate how far behind we are from other countries regarding animal rights, even the columnist of the Australian newspaper, the Herald Sun, has written a piece condemning their own live export trade. And, finally, the Harper government is counting on this practice of us sending animals to foreign countries for the purpose of religious sacrifices uncontested. There was no press release from the Agriculture Department, but we shouldn't let them get away with it. And we need to educate and inform the ordinary public at large that this is happening.
I'm wondering why our government is allowing this. I know you said that Canada has been certified to send these animals out. It was 500 lambs and sheep last year, and I think you said the highest price was $300 each. So I don't think that's huge money for the Canadian government. But what I'm wondering is this more so setting a precedent for more shipments to come in the future?
Yes. And as I mentioned, the Korban Committee, the Singapore Korban Committee, said in their own words that they were using Canada to test out the supply chain. And they had mentioned to their own members that the $757 was a little bit higher than the Australian price because of the small shipment, and that in the future, if they were to acquire a full load, that price would drop, and that for that particular trial run, that they were actually subsidizing it to bring it more in line with the Australian price. So there seemed every indication of their intention to use Canada as a alternate source, particularly in the case if Australia decides to ban their live export.
Well, thank you, Patricia, for coming on the show today to speak with us about your campaign to end the export of Canadian animals for religious sacrifice. And thank you for taking the initiative for this work you are doing on this issue. I want to remind our listeners that there is the Facebook group. It's called Canadians Against Live Export. The link for the petition is there. There is a link for info on finding your MP to write to them. And the link for the petition is also on our website, animalvoices.org. Thanks so much, Patricia, and good luck with the campaign.
Yes, thank you for letting the lambs to speak. Thank you.
You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. And now I have some events for you. So, first off, the Vegan Information Booth is back and will be set up at the Vancouver Art Gallery tomorrow. This is a great place for some positive outreach with the public, and they're going to be doing pay-per-view screenings of Mercy for Animals footage to the public. So the next one is taking place tomorrow, Saturday, March 15th at 1:15 p.m. Also happening soon, a special screening of the documentary Blackfish, which has been making waves in the news recently, will be happening on Monday, March 17th at 6:30 p.m. at the Van City Theater on Seymour Street in downtown Vancouver. Former SeaWorld trainer Carol Ray will be there in person to answer questions, and so will a few Vancouver Park Board commissioners. This is really cool because actually a whole bunch of our co-hosts attended the Vancouver premiere of Blackfish, so it's great to see it back in town. And it's also available on Netflix, so if you haven't checked it out already, it's on Canadian Netflix. I know Canadian Netflix doesn't have a lot of stuff sometimes, but it's got Blackfish, so that's pretty cool.
It's one big thing.
In connection with Blackfish, to couple with this event, Vancouver school children will be protesting whale captivity outside the Vancouver Aquarium on Sunday, March 23rd from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. So you can bring the family and show your support to end the cruel practice of keeping whales in captivity in Stanley Park. I'm pretty curious about this news story. I'm wondering, who are these children?
Yeah,
where are they
awesome.
Coming from?
I didn't know about that. That's amazing.
Well, it's really great. The school children are supporting the cause, so you can too. Also happening soon, actually tonight, March 14th, a segment titled The Trouble with Turkeys will be airing on CBC's Marketplace television program. The show will air at 8 p.m. on the CBC station and will be rebroadcast throughout the weekend, so you can head to cbc.ca/marketplace for full listings. We are actually going to be covering a follow-up on that story on our show next week, which Cynthia will be hosting, so tune in next week, that's noon to 1 p.m. on CFRO Co-op Radio on Friday to learn more about that story. Also coming up soon, Animal Voices, Us Here, and Liberation BC are pleased to be screening a new film called Live and Let Live. This documentary examines our relationship with animals, the history of veganism, and the ethical and environmental reasons that people use to go vegan. The filmmaker will even be here in person for a question and answer session after the film. So be sure to check that out on April 15th at 7 p.m. Mark your calendars. And that's going to be happening at the SFU Harbor Center campus downtown.
And I had a chance to watch the film, and it's great. I highly recommend that you come and watch it.
That sounds pretty exciting that that's going to be coming to Vancouver.
Yeah.
Also happening, coming up really soon, is an event that we are media sponsoring. That the event is Animal Advocacy Camp. So this is a yearly event here in Vancouver. It is a practical attendee-led event where you get to set the agenda and host discussions about what you want to talk about. You can share stories, ideas, and experiences, learn from the experiences of others, and discover the wealth of resources available in Vancouver. There are going to be powerful dialogues about issues and strategies, and this can create and strengthen relationships in the Vancouver community. So come check it out if you want to become a stronger and more effective advocate for animals.
Can I mention a few things about Animal
yeah.
Advocacy Camp that I'm personally organizing? So for people who have registered, we have special lunch catering for the event, and you can go onto the website animaladvocacycamp.ca to put in your orders for vegan pizza or healthier green bowls or sushi and some raw salads. It's going to be good. And then also, I've just been putting this together this week. We're having an after party next Sunday at Gray's Vegan Restaurant, which is a lovely restaurant here in Vancouver. They are offering us a specially priced dinner menu. It's really nice. I posted actually the menu on our Facebook group for Animal Advocacy Camp, but the invitation for all registrants will be going out to your email really soon, hopefully today. I'm hoping I've sent it out already to our web person. So please mark your calendars for that. That's next Sunday after the event, and that's going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to have raffle prizes there as well. And it'll just be really a great time to sum up the weekend and connect and socialize with all the new people that you've met at this event, all the advocates for animals in Vancouver and even beyond.
If that wasn't enough to entice you to come, we should let you know the event will be held at the Croatian Cultural Center on Victoria Drive, and it will be happening on Saturday, March 22nd, and Sunday, March 23rd, beginning at 10 a.m. Doors are at 9, and it ends at 6 p.m. So tickets are now available on eventbrite.com, and tickets are $60 for both days or $30 for one day, which is a really great value considering the caliber of this conference, and it's a pretty unique event.
As far as conferences go, for sure, too, you're not going to find a conference that is affordable.
And also going to be there are some speakers. We've got some lovely keynotes lined up for this year, including Joanne MacArthur, award-winning photojournalist and subject of the documentary The Ghosts in Our Machine. She is an author and photographer of the book We Animals. We will also have Sarah Dubois, BCSPCA's chief scientific officer, directing provincial welfare science operations, education, and advocacy projects. And Dylan Powell, who is the co-founder of Marineland Animal Defense, and he's also the founder of the Live Free Collective and Our Scars movement. And also there will be Lisa Hutchinson, who's executive director of the Small Animal Rescue Society of BC. So lots of local and national contacts going to be attending. So really great event if you haven't already heard about it. And finally, the last event I wanted to mention, March 20th is Farm Animal Rights Movement's annual Meat Out Day celebration and campaign. Meat Out Day invites the public to pledge to eat vegan for a day. You're invited to visit meatout.org to take the Meat Out pledge and help save over 8,000 animals on March 20th. Our next guest is actually here in honor of Meat Out Day, so please stay tuned for our interview with Paul Shapiro.
Thanks so much for that, Jenny. So yes, our first interview is with Paul Shapiro. He is the Vice President of Farm Animal Protection of the Humane Society of the United States, and I consider him to be an expert on all issues pertaining to meat consumption. We had him on the show last year at this time to speak in honor of Meat Out Day, which happens annually on March 20th. And so to recognize this year's Meat Out Day, I would like to welcome him back on the show to give us a scoop on what's happening in our world in 2014 when it comes to various meat-centric issues and the subject of eating less meat. Hello, Paul, and welcome again to the Animal Voices show.
Thanks, Allison. It's great to be back.
Yes, so to start, there have been a few big news stories on the topic of farm animal welfare in the past few weeks, and I would love to talk with you about them a bit. First, last week it was announced that Canada will finally be enacting a national ban on the use of pig gestation crates as part of the National Farm Animal Care Council's new codes of practice for the care and handling of pigs. What are your thoughts on this step for the animals in our agricultural industry, and what does it mean for the pigs?
Well, for a long time, Canada has been lagging behind even the United States, which doesn't have exactly quite a good track record on farm animal protection issues. And now Canada has just leapfrogged in front of us down here in the U.S. by enacting this new rule via the codes that will phase out the confinement of breeding pigs inside of gestation crates. And the alternative to this system of gestation crate confinement is called group housing of sows. That's where the pigs basically have a little bit more space. They're in groups rather than individually confined, and they can walk around and socialize with one another. It doesn't mean they're going to be leading any type of idyllic life on Old McDonald's farm. It doesn't necessarily even mean they're going to go outside, but it does mean they have a better quality of life. It means that one of the worst forms of cruelty to farm animals will be phased out. And fortunately, with this rule, no new gestation crate facilities can be constructed starting in July 1st of this year. And any new facilities that are put in, or any facilities that are even renovated, old facilities that are renovated after July 1st, must be converted to group housing of sows. So this is a big step forward for Canada. Admittedly, all of these rules that we're putting in place for farm animals tend to be pretty modest, giving animals better living conditions, even if not idyllic. But considering the fact that we're talking about millions of animals, having an important improvement in their lot is certainly a good step forward.
Well, another big news story that broke recently was that the very first ag gag bill in 2014 in the United States has now been passed, this one in Idaho. Last year when you were on the show, we were speaking about ag gag bills and noting the fact that not one of the proposed bills had gone through yet to legislation in 2013. But now in 2014, this is no longer the case. For our listeners who aren't aware of what ag gag is, can you brief us on the subject and then tell us how you think this passed bill is going to affect the agricultural industry, the consumers, and the animals in North America?
Sure. In recent years, organizations like the Humane Society of the United States, Mercy for Animals, Compassion Over Killing, and others have conducted a series of undercover exposés at factory farms and at slaughter plants, and these have led to everything from criminal animal cruelty convictions to slaughter plant shutdowns to meat recalls and more. And the meat industry's response to these whistleblowing exposés has not been to try to prevent the abuses that we're uncovering. Rather, it's simply to try to prevent Americans and Canadians from even finding out about these abuses in the first place. And in the U.S., the way they're doing this is with ag gag bills. These are bills that are intended to make it a crime to conduct these undercover investigations. They don't want to stop the abuses. They want to stop the abuses from being filmed. They want to blow the whistle on the whistleblower. And so in some states, like now in Idaho, the meat industry has succeeded in passing these laws to make it a crime merely to take a photo or a video of what happens inside of a factory farm or a slaughter plant. If you want to talk about an industry that's grasping at straws, that is desperate to keep people in the dark about their standard industry practices, you can look at the meat industry and see that's what's happening with these ag gag bills.
Can you just brief us on what other states have passed bills prior to now?
Well, last year there were 15 bills introduced in 11 states of this nature, and every single one of them was defeated. They didn't pass a single one. But in 2012, some states like Iowa and Missouri did pass these bills, and now we have about half a dozen states in the country that have ag gag laws that prevent these type of whistleblowing exposés.
So let's talk about the trends of cutting out the meat and adopting plant-based lifestyles. It seems that these days, more so this year than even last year, that so many well-known people are going vegan. Of course, we have all kinds of pop culture celebrities who go vegan one day and then they go back to eating meat the next. But we do have the past U.S. President Bill Clinton, who went vegan years ago and keeps it up to this day. And now Al Gore has recently gone public with being vegan since last year, and he has stated that he feels better for it and thinks it will be a long-term lifestyle change for him. So what are your thoughts on Al Gore going vegan? He has long been known for his strong environmental message, and he is finally taking the plunge to adopting a plant-based lifestyle.
I applaud the former vice president for his move. I think it's a great one. I think it helps him align his actions with his own ethical values. And I'm really thrilled that he feels better for it. I know that when I became a vegan just over 20 years ago, I certainly felt a lot better in terms of my own personal health. That's not why I did it. I did it to prevent violence against animals. And I didn't even know about the health benefits, but I soon quickly discovered that they're manifold. And when we see cultural icons now, not just like Bill Clinton and Al Gore, but also everybody from Ellen, and even Oprah is extolling the benefits of plant-based eating now too, you know there's a cultural shift that's happening. This is an issue that was really on the margins 10, 15 years ago, and now it's firmly cemented in the mainstream. So much so that a lot of even big fast food chains like Burger King and others are advertising their vegetarian options now.
Speaking of all these companies advertising their options, veganism has been in a huge uprise, and vegan food companies in particular, companies that are on the forefront of developing meat, egg, and dairy substitutes that are just as good as the real thing, are really taking the lead. What's your take on the growth of the vegan food industry?
Oh, it's so exciting, and what's particularly exciting to me is that huge investors, people like Bill Gates and a guy named Li Ka-shing, who's the wealthiest person in all of Asia, are now investing their own money into some of these companies like Beyond Meat and Hampton Creek Foods that are producing plant-based alternatives to meat and eggs. And this, I think, is some of the most exciting things that are happening in the world of vegan eating today, because it's great to have these products available at Whole Foods and at co-ops and smaller natural grocers. But we need to have them be mainstream. We need to have them in Walmart, Safeway and Costco and more. And the venture capital funding that companies like Hampton Creek and Beyond Meat are now attracting are going to make all of that happen. So I could not be more excited about the mainstreaming of some of these brands. And I'm really looking forward to what happens in the next few years. I know I've mentioned Beyond Meat and Hampton Creek. Also, companies like Gardein have really exploded and are doing extremely well for themselves. We're seeing now chains like Veggie Grill expanding, and so the future looks bright. When I first became a vegan, people didn't even know what the word meant. I mean, they didn't know how to pronounce the word. And now you'd be hard-pressed to find people who fit into those categories.
I guess you spent a few years as a vegan. I know I did. Do you have a favorite?
I spent a few years being from the Star Vega. That's really
the Star Vega. I would like to go there. It sounds like a cool place. Do you have a favorite food product? I know there's all these things popping up. So do you have a favorite new trending food chain or product?
Good question.
I'm a big fan of Hampton Creek. They're the company that's producing now Just Mayo, a vegan mayonnaise that is available at Whole Foods and soon will be available at many, many more store locations.
Oh, I thought this was a product of the future. We don't have it here yet, so I'll have to visit.
No, this is a product very much of the present. So I love that. But, you know, for me, I am still a type of guy who would be very happy eating bean and rice burritos and peanut butter and jelly. But at the same time, I realize that, you know, most North Americans are looking for alternatives to animal products that taste and have the texture of animal products. And so I'm thrilled that they're out there.
So not only is adopting vegan diets becoming popular in the mainstream and celebrity culture, but it seems that these days that more and more athletes are popping up everywhere who are living the plant-based lifestyle. We even had a silver medal come from a Canadian vegan in the recent Winter Olympics this year, Megan Duhamel.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
And that certainly boosts the reputation more for athletes when they see how superior their colleagues are performing on plant-based diets. I know you are a vegan athlete yourself. I always seem to be seeing pictures of you on Facebook running marathons or half marathons or doing the Tough Mudder. So what place does the vegan athlete have in our world in 2014 in continuing achievements and perhaps finally negating the myth that we need meat in order to thrive on an athletic level?
Well, that is very kind of you, first of all. I do appreciate that. And
I always like your pictures, by the way, on Facebook, because I really support that. I really applaud your athleticism.
That's very nice of you. Well, get ready to like some more tomorrow, because I'm doing a half marathon in D.C. tomorrow.
Excellent. However,
I do want to point out, there are people who are really phenomenal athletes who are really in leagues of their own. People like Rich Roll and Scott Jurek, Brendan Brazier. These guys are some at the top of their field. I mean, for me, I'm a casual athlete. It's what I do in my weekends and evenings. It's not my job. For these guys, they're really serious vegan athletes, and what they show is that you can not only do well being a vegan athlete, but you can thrive and reach the very top of your field. And they're not the first ones at this. I mean, Carl Lewis, who was a gold medalist in the Olympics many times, he said that the best times he ever got was when he was on a vegan diet. So a lot of people are recognizing that, yeah, there are a lot of ethical benefits to choosing vegan eating. You can certainly help prevent cruelty to animals and help prevent climate change. There's a lot of personal benefits, too. And if you're interested in being an athlete, you should check it out, because there are a lot of health benefits and athletic benefits, energy benefits that you see, even from recovery. You know, eating a lot of plant-based foods are so helpful for recovery after tough workouts that a lot of athletes are doing it just for that purpose alone.
An article came out recently in the mainstream media citing that meat and dairy may be as detrimental to your health as smoking cigarettes. I'll say that that's a bold statement to make in a society that has typically encouraged and valued the consumption of animal products for one's health. This article cited a recent scientific study that shows that not only do middle-aged people who eat a diet high in animal proteins from milk, meat, and cheese are more likely to die of cancer than someone who eats a low-protein diet, but also that people who eat lots of meat and dairy are more likely to die at an earlier age. Regarding the health benefits of a plant-based diet, what are you seeing these days with the public becoming more aware of how animal products are affecting their health and risk of disease and in shifting their diets for health-based reasons?
Well, I mean, I'll just tell you, even anecdotally from talking with people, in fact, right before I hopped onto this interview, I was talking with a gentleman who I just met in the building that I'm at right now, who told me that he usually eats meat only about once a week. And this is just a guy I just met. And there's more and more people who are telling me things like that, that they're reducing their meat consumption, that they are eating more and more vegetarian foods, even if they're not becoming a strict vegetarian or vegan, that they're cutting way back, oftentimes for health reasons. Maybe they want to lose weight, maybe they want to reduce the risk of heart disease or cancer or diabetes. But the studies that we're now seeing coming out, like the one that you just mentioned, are helping to fuel this fire toward plant-based eating. And time again, you see it in the news, that if you want to reduce your risk of some of the biggest killers of North Americans, like heart disease, cancer, stroke, and so on, you really need to be eating fewer animals and eating more plants. Whole foods, like whole grains, nuts, fruits, vegetables, that is the diet that is going to give you the best chance of leading a long and healthy life.
So Kathy Stevens, who runs the Catskill Animal Sanctuary in New York State, just had an article published this week in the Huffington Post entitled, Why Americans Will Be Vegan by 2050. Also a bold prediction, one might say, but is it really? She cites that interest in veganism is growing exponentially. Last year, I know we talked about how in just a period of 5 years from 2007 to 2012, meat consumption in the United States had decreased by 12%. And I believe that I recently read as well that now 2% of Americans Americans identify themselves as following a vegan diet, whereas last year it was 1%, meaning that the number has doubled in such a short time. So what are your thoughts in 2014 for the trend of moving towards a vegan society and away from meat-based diets in North America, statistically speaking?
That is a great question, and it's very hard to predict what may happen 4 decades from now. I mean, the internet itself is less than 3 decades old. I mean, we have only had the World Wide Web for 25 years, and it's so radically transformed all of our lives in such dramatic ways that few people could have possibly envisioned what our world would be like 25 years ago. And so I do find it hard to predict what it may be like in 2050, but I think that if for no other reason than environmental necessity, that the number of animals who are being raised and killed for food will continue to decline, and that per capita rates of animal consumption will also continue to decline. I'm very enthusiastic, not just about these plant-based products like the meat and dairy and egg alternatives, but I also think that people are going to probably start looking toward in vitro products, so producing products that are anatomically identical to meat but without harming an animal, where you didn't have to raise an animal, you didn't have to kill an animal. And you look at those type of products, and I think that there probably is a future for them. They're so much radically more environmentally efficient. They take way less land, way less water, way fewer contributions to greenhouse gases, that I think that the future is one that's looking bright for farm animals, and that we're going to continue to see progress toward both reducing per capita rates of meat consumption and toward toward reducing the total number of animals who are raised and killed for food.
Do you think in the future we'll all have to move to the star Vega and live there?
Well, hopefully we'd be living on a planet that circles the star. However, I wouldn't be averse to it. I definitely am attracted to the thought of checking out what other planets may be like, if we could do it without screwing their planets up too.
So finally, as a vegan yourself, what are some of the staples in your diet that you enjoy on a regular basis? You've been doing it for 20 years, and I'm curious to know what Paul Shapiro, the Vice President of Farm Animal Protection of the HSUS, eats on a daily basis.
It's not that exciting, Allison. I love to eat rice and bean burritos. I eat a lot of lentil soup, and I'm a huge fan of Ethiopian food and Middle Eastern food. So you could find me eating hummus sandwiches, baba ganoush, and falafel. And I don't know how many Ethiopian restaurants you guys have up there, but I live in the D.C. area.
They're everywhere there. I know.
Yeah, a very gigantic Ethiopian community. And so I go to Ethiopian restaurants a lot. I love them.
Well, that's great to know. Thank you, Paul, for coming on our annual meetup show today to share your insights on current news in animal agriculture and the trends towards eating less meat. To find out more about the work that Paul does for farm animal protection, please visit the website, humanesociety.org, and good luck on your half marathon tomorrow.
Oh, thanks so much, Allison. I appreciate it. I'll take your luck as I need it.
Thanks, Paul. Also, if you want to find more about the Meatout campaign, be sure to visit meatout.org, where you can take their pledge to go vegan for a day if you're not already, and you can help over 8,000 animals just in one day.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that that's a really great campaign on there. I mean, it really just brings the issue of, by the way, Meatout is put on by Farm Animal Rights Movement. They are a nonprofit who we've had on the show today. If you want to find more about this campaign, you can go to our website, animalvoices.org, and we did an interview with them about it last year, so just look up, search Meatout on our website, and you'll find out more about what that's all about, and they've got a great website as well. But I think it's just really a great time of the year where you can say to your most omnivorous friends, hey, look, meat out for a day, because, you know, it's not that bad to go for a day without your meat, right? And it's sort of like a day where they can say, yeah, okay, I'm going to recognize this day by maybe just pleasing you, my friend, because you're asking me to do this. And sure, I'll go to the site and sign up.
Peer pressure is the best way to get people to go vegan.
Exactly. I really applaud Farm for putting on this campaign, because we need it. We need it for those people who are not so interested, maybe, or maybe very brand new to the idea of going meatless for a day. So that's what the website and the campaign just asks you to do, is to go meat free for a day on March 20th or around then, whenever you can, and you take the pledge to go vet. And who knows what will happen from there, right?
And also, if you're in the United States or visiting or live there, there are a lot of events happening related to Meatout. So if you check out the website, meatout.org, you might be able to find an event with some free food samples or celebrations happening in a city near you.
All right, and thank you for joining us today. We at Animal Voices want to keep connected with you. Connect with us on Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver. Join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR, and send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook, Twitter, or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And if you want to listen to our podcast or check out any other animal-related news, go to our website, animalvoices.org. Next week's show, Cynthia will be speaking about the recent turkey investigation with Mercy for Animals, and that will be with Krista Osborne.
That's Mercy for Animals Canada, by the way. So this is an investigation that's breaking in Canada today on the CBC Marketplace show. As we mentioned before, check that out. It's on at 8 p.m.
Yeah, we're very lucky that we don't have the egg here, and we can continue to do these investigations. So, tune in for that next week, and please do stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith, and remember to be kind to the animals. We'll be leaving you now with Vegan Style by Henya Menya.
This is Vegan Style. Vegan Style. 8 years ago, I decided to go vegan. No more milk and eggs, fish and cow and even chicken. Everyone thought that it was just a diet phase. Even my Jewish mama asked if I was going crazy. Every day since then, I'm being asked, what's a vegan? People talk as if they have a degree in nutrition. They say, you know it's not healthy, that's the reason you're so skinny. I said, check the FDA. This is Vegan Style. Vegan Style. Oh, 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 oh. This is Vegan Style. Vegan Style. Oh, 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 oh. This is Vegan Style. Hey, vegan lady. Oh, 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 oh. This is Vegan Style. Hey, vegan lady. Oh, 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 oh. The fact that they can suffer. Just for the sake of taste, you're sending animals to slaughter. You don't have to love them in order to not kill them, just like you don't kill people even though you'd love to shoot them. No, it's not a trend, and we don't have a guru. And baby, yeah, we have lots of other things to do. Gary Urofsky, man, best speech you've ever heard. About time to realize your vision has been blurred. What about plants? Don't they have This is Vegan Style. Vegan Style. Oh, 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 oh. This is Vegan Style. Vegan Style. Oh, 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 oh. This is Vegan Style. Hey, vegan lady. Oh, 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 oh. This is Vegan Style. Hey, vegan lady. Oh, 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 oh. My shit smells better. I'm more healthy, ecologic, even happier. Not killing animals makes my conscience clean. Baby, baby, check out my new glowing skin. This is Vegan Style. Vegan lady. Oh, 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 oh. This is Vegan Style. This is Vegan Style.